coming up on New York Now.
I think there was a tremendous outpouring from veterans and their families all across the state when the bill was put aside.
The governor agrees with Assembly Republicans that the merit scholarship should be expanded.
I do not want to send any misimpression to veterans' families that there is anything but total support for them.
New York Now is next, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. This week brought good news for the Assembly GOP and the governor. He got a tax break.
The legislature is off for a couple of weeks, but still plenty of headlines to review. Last week on the show, we discussed how the Assembly GOP was critical of the Democrats in their chamber for not supporting an expansion of the merit scholarship, which provides financial aid to children, spouses, and financial dependents of military members who have died or become severely disabled while in a combat zone. The cry grew louder after the legislature passed the DREAM Act earlier this year, which would provide financial assistance to undocumented children. The pressure seemed to have worked as the governor on Wednesday directed the Higher Education Services Corporation to broaden the interpretation to providing aid. The definition now will simply be, quote, while performing military duties, unquote, not just having the death or injury occur in combat.
I'm sure the service members who put themselves in harm's way always have one question just before they embark on a mission. What if something happens to me? Who will take care of my loved ones? Who will help my children? How will my spouse or significant other handle all the obligations? The peace that we can offer when that question arises is the firm belief that their country, their government, the American people will do, quote, the right thing.
The governor was joined by Mecca Nelson, whose husband Mario was killed in Iraq in 2006.
For me, this action could not be more timely. My daughter will be 16 in June, and we're going on college tours looking for colleges 2 years in advance. So she's going to college in 2 years, so this is like right on time. With this assurance, more kids like my daughter Mia will no longer have to worry if they will be able to go to college and get the education they need and deserve to succeed today's economy. So I want to thank the governor for fighting for Gold Star families. It's the right thing to do, and it is good to have a major impact on so many children who have lost a parent in New York. It's amazing. I just want to thank you so much. So amazing. Thank you.
The governor was asked afterward if it was a mistake for the assembly not to include this expansion in their budget proposal.
I'll leave that for the assembly. They said there were timing issues. It's not uncommon to put all budget relevant issues together for the state budget. If a bill has a financial consequence, the normal protocol is to do it in the budget so we can have all finances allocated. But I think this is a special exception. I think there was a tremendous outpouring from veterans and their families all across the state when the bill was put aside. I do not want to send any misimpression to veterans' families that there is anything but total support for them. And I don't want any political issue or bureaucratic issue to interfere with the understanding that we are 100% committed to supporting our veterans' families. And that's why I'm taking this action.
We got reaction from Assembly Republican Mary Beth Walsh of the Capital Region.
I was a little bit surprised. That generally does not happen. But I think that the one of the important things to remember is that this bill has been around for 10, 11 years, but it really caught fire this year, and I'm very, very glad that it happened.
You're in the Assembly minority, and you're in the minority by quite a bit in your chamber, and like you said, this doesn't happen very often, but you guys kept the pressure on publicly for a good week or so, and it seemed that worked to a large degree.
Yeah, it really did, and I posted on social media, and I've never seen anything like it. I have about, 2,000 people following my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I had over 65,000 engagement on that post. It was insane, and a bunch of shares. Everybody was just really, really upset about it, and I think that helped. I think a lot of people spoke out. I was glad my assembly colleagues did, but it went beyond that. And I think once people in the community understood what happened, mm-hmm. they were really enraged. And I think that just really got things going.
Have you talked to other members of your conference? What did they have to say when they heard the news?
Oh, I mean, I think we're all pretty just happy that it happened, and sorry that it took so long. And I'm really happy for Steve Hawley, because Steve had carried the bill in some form or another for all of these years, for 10 or 11 years. So it's nice that it for him that it finally got done.
And for your conference, maybe a little renewed vigor heading into the second half of session, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I think very often people say, well, you're in the minority, what can you do? And I think that this is a really good example that we can really affect change through our advocacy. And I just started my third year in the assembly, and I think one of the things I understand is that I can't do anything necessarily in my name, maybe getting it to the floor, but I can partner with members across the aisle who are like-minded, and I can still be a very strong advocate for things that are right. And if I don't care who gets the credit, you really can get a lot done. So I think this is a good example of that.
In other news, senior U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer was in Lake George this week, where village officials and local elected leaders are trying to secure funding for a new wastewater treatment plant. The Department of Environmental Conservation has a consent order requiring the village to replace the 85-year-old facility by 2021. The mayor says they are still around $4 million short of the $26 million price tag.
Loads of people, including friends of mine, spend weeks up here in the summer, right at Lake George, right on the shores of Lake George from Brooklyn, New York. And the whole Northeast knows of Lake George. All of Canada knows of Lake George. People from around the world come to Lake George. If this lake becomes so you can't swim in it, so its color, its beautiful blue, turns to this pea soup green, we're going to lose all that. People will go somewhere else. Right now, it's known for its beauty. That's behind us. Right now, it's known for its beautiful waters. Right now, it's known as a kid-friendly place. Loads of families love to come. You know, my parents took me, as I mentioned, when I was 5, and my sister was 2, and my brother was not yet born. So it's a great place, and we don't want to, and a stitch in time saves 9. If people were to ignore this problem, and then you said it's too late, like has happened to a few of our lakes and happened to Lake Erie, it's over.
North Country Senator Betty Little was on hand and said she hopes the state steps in to help make up the difference.
There is $500 million in this year's budget that is still to be allocated over clean water and certainly wastewater treatment, clean water systems. And the governor is very aware of the fact that clean water is important, and most of these small communities cannot afford to put these enormously expensive systems in. And if you don't have the best system, you're not going to get the good results that we need to get. So we'll be advocating. I certainly have written letters in support of additional funding for this. I talked to the commissioner of DEC, Basil Sagos, just last week about it. And they know that I think you're going to start the project soon. Bids are going out.
Opening bids tomorrow.
Tomorrow. And it's not just a one-year project. It's a two-year project at least. So this year and next year, hopefully we can get funding out of that $500 million.
Also this week, Capital Region Congressman Paul Tonko appeared alongside the Northeastern New York chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Tonko was the lead Democratic sponsor of a bill signed into law last December called BOLD, or Building Our Largest Dementia Infrastructure for Alzheimer's Act.
It will deal with cognitive decline. It will deal with brain research and Alzheimer's and dementia in of its own right. But, you know, that will then percolate into the states. Resources will be shared with the states where states are already doing something like this, like New York. It will further strengthen their activity. And then they will utilize the data that are part of that whole process and be fed back into CDC and HHS so that they can, through that data compilation, come up with additional measurements or efforts so as to provide for however we can preventative efforts or respond to the needs of individuals and families, and again, to really forcefully add the statement that we need to do much more research.
The Democrat introduced a new bill a few weeks ago called Improving Hope for Alzheimer's Act that would make it easier for patients to find out about and receive post-diagnosis care services under Medicare. And finally, environmental groups and Hudson Valley residents gathered in Albany Monday to protest a proposed incinerator ash dump in the town of Catskill. Wheelabrator Technologies is currently in the process of applying for permits from the state DEC and operates incinerators in Peekskill, Poughkeepsie, and Hudson Falls. If approved, the site would be housed in a former quarry in the town. Former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Ank said the site is known to have extensive drainage systems that lead to the nearby Hudson River. In the press conference, Ank described her meeting with Catskill Town Supervisor Doreen Davis.
It was a very odd meeting about 5 weeks ago, Jess. So it was Riverkeeper, myself, a local resident from Greene County, Mary Finneran attended, who's a local environmental leader, and the town supervisor, who was very gracious and, you know, very welcoming and nice, said she was not going to say anything about the project. She was just here to listen. That's never a good start when you're dealing with such a vital issue. And then she made the case that she cannot tell a private landowner what to do with their own property, which is absolutely not true. We pointed out that, for instance, when communities were faced with threats from hydrofracking, you had local governments pass local laws saying no fracking, passing resolutions. So, you know, it was a very odd meeting. I think she's keeping an open mind. I also think that she's completely deferring to, her phrase was, subject matter experts. I'm a subject matter expert on this, and I didn't feel like there was a lot of interest in hearing about public health and environmental impacts.
The coalition is holding a public meeting next week for residents. There's more information on that event on our website, nynow.org. All right, let's send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who will moderate today's Reporters Roundtable.
All right, and now for analysis of the week's news, we're at the Reporters Roundtable with Rick Carlin from my own paper, The Times Union, and Bill Mahoney from Politico. Well, gentlemen, this week the governor weighed in on what was last week's big debate in Albany, even though it's a holiday week, and that was over the extension or the expansion of tuition benefits to the families of those who die in combat. And the governor said he was going to take administrative action despite the legislature's saying that it wanted to address this issue.
Yeah, this was an issue that really blew up much more than it normally would. We see this time of year, pretty much every committee meeting, members of the minority in the assembly forever, the Republicans, forcing votes on some of their bills just so they can say that the majority members oppose it. That usually leads to these bills dying a rapid death and nobody ever hearing about them again. But this time it really caught on, and the issue of giving benefits to Gold Star families really seems popular, unsurprisingly. And Republicans were also able to portray this against the DREAM Act, which passed earlier in the session and helps undocumented immigrants, saying, well, you have money for them, why not Gold Star veterans and their families? And this really picked up steam. It was on Fox News on Saturday night, then Donald Trump was tweeting about it, and the issue just didn't go away, and eventually it got done through Cuomo taking action.
Yeah, the Assembly's answer, the Democrats' answer was, well, the budget's done, we don't have the money. But that's kind of a feeble rejoinder, because they're constantly passing bills that they say, well, there's going to be no cost to this, and we all know there is a cost to it. They can always find some money. This is not a huge sum of money. I believe it's less than $1 million for these families of children or of military people who are killed on active duty rather than just in being in a combat zone. And it was a bit of a rhetorical bear trap that I think the Assembly Democrats stumbled into.
And the governor said, oh, we can't wait until the next budget cycle like the Democrats are suggesting. Yeah. We need to act now on this. But the governor, of course, has been governor for the last 8 years, right?
Yeah, it wasn't in his budget this year, obviously. Yeah. It's not something that's been talked about before. But practically speaking, it might have just been that nobody really thought about this idea. It's not like Democrats in the Assembly necessarily opposed this, as they were portrayed as doing. It's just that by the informal rules of the Assembly, Republicans are not allowed to receive votes on bills. Right. And the last time that a Republican member of that body had a bill voted on that just didn't deal with renaming a bridge in their district or something was Jim Tedisco doing the constitutional amendment to let the legislature stop printing so much paper 4 or 5 years ago. And since then, lots of ideas, some of them are very similar to ideas sponsored by Democrats that ultimately pass. But none of them actually come to the floor.
You need a Democratic sponsor to move something in the Assembly. And the day after that whole thing broke open, Assembly Democrat Felix Ortiz came out and said, well, let's do this. And he sponsored a bill that was kind of mirrored what the Republicans wanted. The governor, I'd say, kind of at least politically deftly grabbed the issue. He kind of came off looking like, once again, the good guy. Well, let's just take care of this. We can't wait for the bureaucracy. Let's just solve the problem. And
good guys deserve rewards, of course. And as a segue, the governor got one this year, maybe unexpectedly, on his tax return. Yeah. When everybody looked at it, it turned out that the governor paid slightly less this year. His rate went down after, of course, the federal tax changes that the governor has railed against went down from 19.6% to 18.5%. putting about $2,600 additional in the governor's pocket.
You know, it's interesting because the governor obviously has been railing about the loss, the limitations of the SALT deduction for home for income property taxes, but I don't believe he's a homeowner in New York State, if I'm correct. So for him,
he pays his partner's bill,
but I don't know that it's in, you know, it's his house. So it's sort of an interesting twist there. But yeah, I mean, I think the Republicans all along have been saying that a lot of people are actually going to pay lower taxes, even middle class and upper middle class New Yorkers.
Yeah, and Cuomo certainly was one of them. Though, to be fair, as you were hinting at, he doesn't deduct any property taxes on his form. So the governor's office has pointed out that most people making a couple $100,000 a year will probably be paying quite a bit in property taxes in New York State.
They'll get hit harder on their property taxes.
So it could have affected him had he had been paying for those, as presumably most people in his income bracket do. Mm-hmm. But it is an ironic twist. After when this bill was first proposed, he was out there saying that Congress was going to raise the tax bills for every single New Yorker. He's been a bit more focused on reality in the year since then, just saying it's a higher earners, but he's definitely a relatively high earner overall. Most New Yorkers are not making a couple $100,000 a year.
And he's about to become an even higher earner when his salary goes up. So moving on, the governor also had a lot to say about the threat, as he put it, faced by independent expenditure campaigns. He was speaking in the context of the battle between the hotel trades union and Airbnb. And the governor said, it's independent expenditures that is the real problem in many of these kind of influencing campaigns.
Yeah, this was interesting. He was asked, he was ostensibly talking about public financing to a large degree throughout his comments, but he couched it in language that he's used for years where he says, I support public financing, but it's not actually going to work because you have all these super PACs that will just come in and drown out any money that somebody might be able to spend if they rely on small donors. But this time around, it was pointed particularly at Senate Democrats, who he's been feuding with for quite a few months. There are lots of groups that have made massive independent expenditures in the past few years, though they are, unlike the governor suggests, a relatively small part of the campaign finance system.
If you noted, I think, like less than a fifth of all total campaign spending.
Well, if you look at the Senate, it's about a sixth of the total money on the Senate, and that was the highest point for independent expenditures. Like Governor Cuomo's run for office three times in the past three election cycles. Each time spent close to $40 million or thereabouts I don't think he's donated. He's benefited from more than $100,000 of independent expenditure spending combined during those three elections. So it's negligible in gubernatorial races and assembly races. There hasn't been a lot to speak of.
Rick, you covered a significant decision in a lower court, but still, that really brought a stop to a plan by the State Education Department to assess non-public schools.
Yeah, the State Education Department last fall released what they called guidelines, in which local school boards would have to eventually, over a five-year period, go into all non-public schools and do surveys to make sure they were offering a substantially equivalent education. So they'd have to go into local Catholic schools, local Jewish yeshivas, even independent schools like private academies, do a survey. There was a whole checklist of things that they had to fill out to determine whether or not they were up to par, basically, as to what meeting the state requirements for a public school education. And the local school boards would have to vote on that. That was met by immediate opposition. First, the yeshivas said, we're not going to let you in. It's a church-state issue. The Catholic schools said, this is unfair. We don't want to be surveyed by the local school boards.
Essentially the competition.
Which is competition. Yeah. They're competing for students. The independent school said, we've been fine for over 100 years. We've never heard of any complaints. And it ended up in court, all three combined. And a judge in Albany County State Supreme Court concluded that these were not guidelines, these were actually new rules, and therefore the State Education Department had erred. They didn't go through the proper procedures of creating new rules, which is a whole
public comment.
You have to hold rulemaking procedures. Others have suggested this is really should be up to the legislature. This started with the ultra-Orthodox Jewish yeshivas. There was a lawsuit several years ago by some of the graduates complaining that they really were not getting any kind of secular education. Some of the really most conservative ultra-Orthodox yeshivas really just focus on Torah, which is the Hebrew Old Testament and its extrapolation. And you know, they were claiming that some of these kids are coming out of these yeshivas and they don't know any math. They've gotten no science. Their English is not very good because much of the instruction is in Yiddish. So there was a lawsuit. The legislature got involved and they directed the State Education Department to do something about it. These rules, to some extent, have always been in place, but they've never been enforced.
Right.
And now they updated and beefed up the rules, and it ended up in court.
What do you think the odds are that the state's going to appeal?
That's a good question. I think they're going to have to really look it over, see if it's an appeal. This was the trial level court, so they could take it to the appellate division, and then they could take it to the Court of Appeals. I think that if they tried to appeal it, I think they'd have a pretty good chance of getting this to the Court of Appeals pretty quickly, because you know the school year is always proceeding. There's always kids going through the system, so there's a time element from that standpoint.
And finally, this week's edition of Journalism Gets Results goes to Bill Mahoney, who wrote about the difficulties faced by people simply trying to get into the Capitol building.
Yeah, the lines have really expanded outside of security this year. There were several times during the pre-budget rush where the lines are always bad, but there were times this year where you would see them hundreds of people deep. It would take over an hour to get in. They'd just be stretching well into the concourse, which is the underground entryway that leads up to the Capitol. And it was impractical for people to come. The state police did announce earlier this week that they would be adding a couple of extra checkpoints to hopefully expedite this process for members of the public who want to participate in government. That being said, there still are some changes that a lot of people are unhappy with, such as a rule to take off your belt before going through security and treating it kind of like you're at an airport or something. That's still on the books for now. We'll see. A lot of people are still very unhappy with that and say it slows down the lines, but it does seem like they'll be a little bit more tolerable in May than they were in March.
All right. And
your story noted that they, at one point, they had brought out, occasionally you'd see a trooper with an assault weapon
standing out there, which was new, and I
remember seeing that saying, gee, is this really necessary? And that was a fairly recent development. That has not traditionally been what they're carrying, but once in a while they'll toting one of these guns.
Strapped.
It's like, whoa, wait a minute.
It's the people's house, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Well, thanks very much for the good analysis from Rick Carlin of the Times Union and Bill Mahoney of Politico. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right. Thanks, Casey. Now that you have read some, all of the Mueller report, what do you think? Is it mostly good news or bad news for President Trump? Let us know at nynow.org. Last time around, we asked if you wanted to see the president's tax returns. We highlighted legislation that lawmakers introduced that would force their release in New York. And 8 out of 10 said yes. Carlos in Rochester, tuning in on WXXI, told us, what better opportunity to show the world that in New York State, nobody is above the law. That includes the 45th President of the United States. Deborah in Hudson, he has not released them because he is hiding something. What is it? We have a right to know at least this much about our president. And finally, Bob in Owego said, there is nothing in the Constitution that requires a president to release his or her tax returns. The Dems are just on another harassment mission rather than doing the job they were elected to do. Remember to vote in this week's poll at nynow.org, and thanks to all those who did this week. On the website, you can watch any of our past programs and follow links to us on social media. And there's a link to the Times Union's Capital Confidential blog. It's also available at timesunion.com.
All right, we end the show today with scenes from the North Country. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.